Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of On My Mind. I'm Shelley Griffith, and today I'm extremely excited to be in Apalachicola, Florida, with a newfound friend, Captain Gil Autry, who's going to tell us about an amazing career and a lot of great stories. And welcome to the program, Gil.
Thank you, Doc. I really appreciate this. I've been looking forward to it.
We're just tickled to have you with us and look forward to hearing a lot about your history. And start us off with the listeners, if you will, where you were born and raised and some early education.
I was born in Valdosta, Georgia, and I went to Macaulay School in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was a military school. That's where they sent juvenile delinquents. So the judge told me I could either go to reform school or military school. So I chose military school. So I spent 4 years in military school in Chattanooga. And then I went to the University of Georgia, and I majored in economics and minored in mathematics, actually. And my plan was to go to graduate school. I was accepted to graduate school, had a teaching assistantship. And my plan was to get a PhD in economics and actually one day be the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, believe it or not. That was my goal in life. So that was spring of 1968, right after the Tet Offensive. So I went home on spring break to the draft board to tell the lady, Miss Loretta C. Clayton, actually, a.k.a. Nurse Cratchit. That's what she reminded me of.
Okay.
With all my documentation, to let her know I wouldn't be doing any business with them. And she said, after the Tet Offensive, all deferments have been canceled. You'll take your physical in May and be drafted in June. And I said, that's not really what the plan was. I wanted to fly, and I didn't want to get drafted in the Army. I was married, and I had a child on the way. I think you got $180-something dollars a month as a private in the Army. So you couldn't get in the Navy or the Air Force. So I made an appointment with the Marine recruiter in Jacksonville, and my daddy and I went down there, and I wanted to fly. So, you know, the recruiters have quotas. So how you think they doing on their quotas in the spring of 1968? Not too many idiots are trying to join the Marine Corps. So I can see the captain and the gunnery sergeant are looking at me and they're thinking, we ain't letting this turkey out of here. We're going to get him. So I told the captain I wanted to fly. And he said, we're going to have to give you a math test. I minored in math. So I said, that's fine. He said, what is 7 plus 7? And I said, 15? He turned to the gunnery sergeant and said, what do you think, Gunny? He said, oh, hell, Skipper let him in. He only missed it by 2.
and it was almost that easy. Oh, my.
So 1 o'clock that afternoon, I got sworn in the Marine Corps and went to flight school, became a helicopter pilot, served 5 years and served a tour in Vietnam, and was a captain when I got out. And then I came back home. A bank back home wanted to hire me. And it was a small country bank, First National Bank of Valdosta. And we could do anything. And we didn't have to ask anybody anything. If we want to loan you some money, we'd loan you some money. You know, I was in the bank, been there for 13 years, and I swear, I didn't know what a credit report was. I never got one. I knew you, and I knew the collateral, and you know, I knew your family, so I'd loan you some money. Then, of course, the bank sold out, and it sold out, and they were going to make me the president of the bank. And I thought, I don't want to be the president of the bank. So I quit. That was a real smart say. I'm a genius. But, you know, if I'd have stayed in the bank, they got bought out. They ended up being part of First Union, which went under. And I'd have been there for 30 years thinking I'm going to have a couple million dollars in bank stock for retirement. I would have been pretty upset.
Absolutely.
So my daddy was a tobacco farmer, and he had some strokes and wasn't well, so I left the bank and went down to the farm, and I was concerned about the future of tobacco, not just because it's not good for people. I didn't like the idea of growing something that was harmful. So I got interested in growing produce. You could sell your tobacco allotments. So I sold all my tobacco allotments and started the produce and tomato business. This was in North Florida, in Jennings, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I got hooked up with some of the largest tomato producers in the country from South Florida, and they wanted to do a partnership. So we did a partnership. And ultimately, we had a pretty sizable operation. We had a produce packing shed in Jennings, Florida, and a tomato packing shed in Quincy, Florida. We had a plant farm in Cecil, Georgia, where we grew vegetable transplants. We sold them from South Florida all the way up to Canada. It was a big operation. It was doing great. And in 1994, Bill Clinton signed into law the NAFTA. And also the Mexican tomato farmers flooded the market, and it was costing us $5-6 a box to put up a box of tomatoes, and we were selling for $1.50. I've majored in math. I could figure out that wasn't working.
Not long.
Needless to say, that went down. And then in 1995, I had to have angioplasty twice. I had heart problems. And then my wife of 30 years decided she wanted a divorce, which blindsided me. I think it might have had something to do with the amount of money I was not making. I always suspected that. So I just sold out what I had left of my business and moved down here. I've been coming down here since 1973, and I love the water. And so I got into mortgage and real estate development. I met Lane in 2004. That was 1998 when I moved down here. And of course, in 2006, the market crashed. I don't mean it was slowed down, it was dead. You couldn't sell anything. So we already had that little houseboat of ours, so I went to Coast Guard school and got my captain's license. I've been doing that for 14 years. It's the best thing I've ever done.
Now, tell us, Gil, why did you segue into doing the boating? I understand about changing some of the career, but why did you pick that as opposed to something else down here?
There wasn't anything else.
Nothing.
I mean, you know, you're a fisherman or you're in real estate.
Okay.
Or you work in a restaurant or a hotel. There's no other industry here. Besides, my houseboat's my 18th boat. I have number 19, but I'm through now. I'm not buying anymore. But I've been running boats since I was 7 years old, and that's what I've always loved to do. I mean, we bought that boat because we got 11 grandchildren and 10 granddogs and 5 children, and we took them out. We take friends out. So now I'm just getting paid for what I used to do for free.
I love it. Now, we got to take folks a wonderful tour yesterday with Captain Gil and some friends, and saw just some beautiful inlets and coves and things. Got to see a gator pop up and just gorgeous bird life. And I think it's interesting because those of us who are unknowledgeable, if there's such a word, of water stuff, you're so calm with it. You've obviously been doing it a lot of years. But I told Gail yesterday, I said, how does he know exactly which little slough that he's in? And so this comes natural, I assume, after you've studied all this and you go out, turn around, everything looks the same to us. So how do you know all of that?
Actually, yesterday I thought I'd taken the wrong turn. I wasn't real sure where we were.
Oh, okay.
I've just done it so many times.
So you could make a wrong turn. Love it. And I know there are dials and all that stuff. It's fascinating. And when you started at first, were you pretty busy, or are you busier today now many years later, or are you slowing down some?
No, I tell you, when I first started, it was the spring of 2010.
Okay.
So you may not remember, but that was a BP oil spill.
Oh, yeah.
And so my business just died. Nobody would come down here. People wouldn't eat Gulf seafood. So BP had this program, listen to this, called Vessels of Opportunity. Isn't that some BS, if you ever heard it? And what it was is something to keep the natives quiet. So if you had a license, a commercial license, they'd pay you $1,500 a day to go cruise around in the bay to look, see if any oil would come in. Mm-hmm. I was so mad I wouldn't do it. So I just said, I'm just going to mind my own business. I don't want to have anything to do with BP. So I didn't do it. So when it first happened, if you had any kind of license, they gave you $5,000 with no questions asked. And that month, the store in East Point sold more big screen TVs than anyone and any other in the country. After about 6 months, they would pay you for your losses, they said. I'd just gone into business. I didn't have a tax return. I didn't have any history. I said, I'll go down there. I go down there and talk to this nice lady. And I said, I did a pro forma based on some information that a guy that was doing it before me gave me. She said, what did it show? And I said, it showed I should make about $5,000 a month. She says, why don't we put in a claim for $30,000? I said, why don't we? I thought, this is ridiculous. About 2 weeks later, I get a check for
$30,000. Really?
And then at the end, if you signed a thing that you would hold BP harmless, they'd give you $25,000. So I kept my business. I ended up making as much money as I would have made if I'd been in the vessel's opportunity, because you can't get losses if you've been being paid $1,500 a day. But your question was, how busy am I? I'm busy. And I'm like I told you, if somebody calls and I don't even advertise. If somebody calls and want to go out, that's fine. I'll take them. If they don't call, that's even better. But I have all the business I want. And I don't advertise. Just people find out about me, and I got a lot of repeat business and all that sort of stuff. So it's a pretty good deal, really.
How many folks, Gil, are doing what you're doing here in Apalachicola? The private tours and things, nobody else?
Nobody can do what I do because they don't know my stories. But there's another gentleman that does it, and if I'm booked, we refer each other.
Good.
As a matter of fact, I got a referral from him yesterday, but he's a nice guy. But
I think the stories, folks, and as I may have told you, our listeners on the podcast, and I'm stunned, Gil, that we're still clicking along weekly after 15 months, because I never listened to a podcast before I ever started this stuff. But the stories, the wonderful stories that can be told by folks, and you were just telling some great stories as we were going around on the tour yesterday, and that's a great statement. If he doesn't know the stories, nobody knows them, and you got them. And you and I are in that same basic age range, not too far apart, that we gather stories, and we love relating and talking to people about them. And I think that's what so many folks, and we've found on our program, we're developing those folks who are listening that are more in our age range, because I learned that the podcast industry appeals to kids 15 to 35. Those are the ones that listen to most of the stuff, but I'm excited that we can do this. Now, as you're looking ahead seasonally, I may have asked you this yesterday, your busiest time here is winter season, or not necessarily?
I'm probably busier in the winter than any other time because all the snowbirds are here. But I'll be honest with you, last summer was hot. And see, people don't understand, I'm not as young as I look. and it wore on me, so I might just knock off a little bit in the summer and just get lane and go take a trip somewhere. But I'm busy the year. Now, I'm not busy from probably the first part of August till after Labor Day, because everybody's going back to school and it's hot. It's what's known as dog days. So that's about my only really downtime, and that's when we used to go up to North Georgia to the mountains and with some friends then.
Pretty time up there in our region. Now, did you say you all had been up to East Tennessee where we are? Or you've been through East Tennessee? Or
yeah.
Stayed up there at all?
No.
Not in the area? Okay. What we need to do is get Jim and Beth and Gail and I, grab you all a couple of days, come that way. We'll show you all of East Tennessee. And that doesn't mean you're going to want to move there by any means. But a lot of people we found would come down I-75 from Michigan, the Ohio area, Illinois, and they would just transplant right there in East Tennessee, and they just, I guess, love the seasons. But it is interesting. Now, With the grandkids, do you get to see them often?
Yeah. We've got six in Tallahassee, which is 2 hours away. And, of course, Lane lived in Tallahassee when we met, so she has connection up there. And then I go to the VA clinic up there, which is a little bit too often. And then I've got five in Atlanta, so they get down there. I've always said, if you want your grandchildren to come see you, just live in Apalachicola and have a boat, and they're going to come see you. Like our youngest one, the little boy, I probably should say this on the but he got potty trained, so I taught him how to pee off the boat. He thought that was the finest thing you could ever do. So he'll get on the phone in Tallahassee, and he'll say, Papa Gil, are you on your boat? I said, no, Blaine, I'm at home. He just can't understand why I'm not on my boat.
Oh, how precious. I just see that, especially going right there. But that's how we learn. Exactly how we learn. Now, in your careers, the ones you've done, and certainly with banking, but you had mentioned yesterday, I thought, that you got into some of the, what was it, wedding catering stuff?
Our daughter was getting married, and she wanted me to do the ceremony, being a Coast Guard captain, but actually that doesn't fly. I got my notary license, which you could do in Florida. And the wedding went fine. I didn't think it had anything to do with my boat business, but I've actually had five weddings on the boat. I had a couple that wanted to get married, and I said, we can do that. And they said, we want to bring a friend and a two Labrador retrievers. I take pets. So I said, that's fine, we can do that. So I went up in the St. Marks River and anchored under an osprey nest, you know, since they mate for life. And I got to the part, do you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband? And about that time, both the dogs jumped in the river. The bride had a complete meltdown. She was just bawling. And so I said to myself, okay, y'all wanted to bring the dogs? Y'all got to figure out how to get them back in the boat. That ain't the captain's problem. So the groom had to jump in the river. But we got the dogs back in and got the bride calmed down and got them married.
Oh, goodness.
But it's a real honor that somebody wants me to do that.
I think it's great.
But actually, I've been, and this is even more of an honor, I've been asked to spread ashes three times, including Lane's brother, the artist we're talking about.
Yeah. That's something I think is fascinating, because the, not duties, but the things that you can do as a captain, certified, like you said, Coast Guard, that's amazing. That's got to be a pretty solemn event, but... And we did that, Gil, in our family. When my mother-in-law passed away, she'd always pretty much lived on a lake. She said, that's where my ashes are going. And if you don't spread them right here where I used to live, then I'm going to come back and haunt you till y'all are gone. And so we made sure that we were able to ask the new owner of the property, and it worked beautifully. But I think it's wonderful. Now, what do you see from your time here? And I guess the natives, Appalach or Latch, do I hear Latch occasionally?
Appalach.
Appalach. What do you see as maybe in the next few years, things occurring here, more people maybe moving in or things changing much, stability in the area?
Yeah, there are a lot of people moving in, and mostly they're here in the wintertime. But we're trying very hard to maintain the history and the culture. There's a lot of disturbing things. The main thing here is the seafood industry. Mm-hmm. They used to have what they call mullet boats, gill net boats. And they had the motor in the front and a net in the back. Mm-hmm. And they'd go out there and catch mullet. Okay. These recreational fishermen that come down here from Atlanta or whatever, they decided that was bad. So they actually voted the nets out. So in 1994, they banned the nets. So you're talking about a culture that people have done for generations, and all of a sudden, that's gone. So now the problem we have, we are the oyster capital of the world. We were. But the problem we have is the Corps of Engineers, the bay we have, Apalachicola Bay is an estuary, and that's where salt and fresh water mix. It took 1 million years for it to get in proper balance. took us less than 100 to screw it completely up with the dams and all up in Georgia, so we don't get enough fresh water in drought times to keep the bay in balance. And then the oil spill came, and so we didn't know it was going to destroy the bay, so they have summer and winter beds, so they opened all the beds, they took off the bag limits, and we over-harvested. The oyster industry just crashed, so they've closed the bay for 5 years. We're probably about to the fourth year. And the oysters, the locals say the oysters have come back. The state say the oysters haven't come back. Now, who do you believe? Here's my theory, and this is just my theory. If the oysters come back, the state can't get any more grants to study why the oysters aren't coming back. Mm. But they say they're back. So they went to the oyster industry. Then you got the shrimp boat people. The shrimp that they catch in the Gulf and the Bay are just the best you can get, but they can't make any money because they import shrimp from China and all these places. And to keep the market depressed, you have to get more for a pound of shrimp than a gallon of diesel costs. But you know, in China, they bring women in from North Korea, and they're basically slave labor, and they sexually abuse them. And then, but some people have found out where these particular shrimp are coming from, and that Cisco quit buying from them, and McDonald's quit buying from them. So what they ought to do is it's like NAFTA. Same thing's happening to the seafood business, happened to the tomato business. What they ought to do is just ban all that stuff coming in here because it's nasty. It's grown in cesspools. That's my main concern, is the viability of the seafood industry. And the old timers here in the seafood business, you can have somebody that's done really well and worth several $1 million, and somebody that's just an oysterman, and you meet them on the street and you don't know the difference.
Really, I'm understanding what you're saying, that the so-called outsourcing, which happens in other industries, are bringing this in. So the local folks who've done it for generations are really getting messed over for that for at least the next couple of years till they open the bay up. Am I understanding that?
Yeah. It's still shrimping. They're going to open the bay back. But they're also farm-raising oysters.
Right.
But they're not like overseas. These are out in the bay. They're in the open water. They're not in an enclosed pool. But the farm-raised oysters are very successful and very good. But, I mean, everybody can't do that. In the old days, you had an oyster boat and a pair of tongs, and that was their life. And some people worked hard and sent the kids to school and all that sort of stuff, and some people oystered and then drank beer till they finished up the beer and went back and drank and oystered some more.
Exactly. And I think I was saying yesterday to Paula about later on at lunch, seeing one of the places on 98 down here that my son-in-law and I had stopped for lunch few years back, and that could have been pretty close to the time they closed the bay down, but the folks there were so nice to show us what it is, from bringing them in to get them all shelled out and ready to sell. And fascinating to watch the process of how they do that, and a lot of super hard work, as you know better than the rest of us. But yeah, so the other thing I was going to ask, and is the real estate down here has gone out of sight. I was here 4 years ago and looking at some property for a group of us to buy maybe and share a home if we could, and we couldn't back then. Then I've looked at some of these prices on the waterfront, especially over in St. George, and that has escalated, I guess, like everywhere else. Just crazy, some of these prices. Banking, I love what you said, because our local bank at home in Athens has just been purchased. The announcement will come next month. Third buyout in 5 years, 6 years. I'm hoping they'll keep some of the local folks that we've known for 30-something years around. But this didn't happen with one of the banks. An outfit came in and bought a 102-year-old bank about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Got rid of 60 people.
That's
within
right.
1 month. Boom, just gone. And like you were saying, but yeah, that industry has changed so much. As you look at what you're doing, it's interesting, folks, because Gil also is an accomplished musician. And when did you pick that up? Were you young when you started playing?
Yeah, I don't know where it came from, but when I was 11 years old, all I wanted was a guitar. So I wanted to ask for one for Christmas. But like I said, my daddy was a tobacco farmer. There were only two opportunities to get anything when I was growing up, birthday and Christmas. You didn't get to go to the mall anytime you wanted to. And then the tobacco market opened in August, and I could tell from daddy how the market went, and I know I might have to wait another year to ask for a guitar, but that year was good. But yeah, that, I got a guitar for Christmas, and I learned how to play it a little bit. And actually, by the time I was 13 years old, I had my own rock and roll band. We played for $35 a night.
Oh, God.
And you probably remember, I was supposed to open for Billy Crash Craddock. You remember him?
Oh, sure do. Really?
Yeah, but in another town, but I couldn't get there. But if I'd opened up for him, I would have been a teen idol. It'd been nothing but sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I probably wouldn't even be here.
Oh, my goodness. I love it.
So, then I went off to college and all that. And so, in about my senior year in college, I started playing a little classical guitar, a little bit. That's mainly what I play now. And so when I was in the Marine Corps, they were going to send me to Okinawa for 6 months and then to Vietnam for 6 months. And I said, okay, whatever y'all want to do. Then they came back and said, no, we're going to send you to Okinawa for a whole year. I said, that sounds like a good idea to me. So I took my golf clubs. I hadn't been able to play golf because I've been in training and all that. And then I got over to Okinawa, and you could buy these wonderful Japanese handmade guitars for not much money because of the exchange rate and all. Mm-hmm. So I bought a guitar. And then I thought to myself, I like the Marine Corps, but if I don't have any combat time, that won't be good. So I said, what I'll do is I'll volunteer for Vietnam since they're not sending anybody to Vietnam. So I went to a squadron commander. I said, I want in my record, I volunteered. He said, Autry, you idiot. We're not. I said, okay. Oh. Just put it. So they sent me down to the Philippines for jungle survival school. And I came back and a quota had come in for somebody to go to Vietnam. So they gave it to the squadron idiot. Mm. So I didn't have anything to do with my golf clubs and my guitar, so I took them with me. And there I was in the induction center denying in line with all those poor kids that are going out in the bush, and I had my guitar and my golf clubs. Oh,
that's a picture I can see.
So there was a major that actually had a guitar, and he wanted me to play Elizabethan duets with him, Henry Purcell and John Dowland and all them. So it's so surreal. I was flying in combat during the day and playing Elizabethan duets at night.
Oh,
God. The problem is, Doc, don't tell anybody this, but he didn't drink.
Oh.
And I'd show up about half pied. You ever tried to play Elizabethan duets when you're about half crock doodle?
Not. Thank you.
So then after I got out of the Marine Corps, I went to California and I studied classical guitar out there, and then I came back to Valdosta, and Valdosta State University got a guitar instructor and studied with him. So I actually put in a considerable amount of time studying and playing the classical guitar. Mm-hmm. And I play in out around here, and I play in the church sometimes because I'm trying to get into heaven. I think I fell behind early on in my life pretty bad, so I think if I play the guitar in church, maybe I can make it.
I love it. Yeah, and I started as a kid, same thing. I wanted a guitar so bad. I had about 7. Never got one. Finally, when I got to medical school, I bought a tiny Yamaha guitar. I had enough money saved up, and my wife said, okay, press on, before we had kids. I don't remember what it was, 20 bucks, 25. It wasn't very big, fancy. Started plunking around on it, and that became my go-to thing like you're talking about. Just relax, end of a stressful day, play a little guitar. One of my buddies in medical school went on, I think, could have been a professional, really, and he never did. He became a successful surgeon. But then I started picking up the easier stuff, like a harmonica. Did it for a good while, put it away, never touched it again until a few years ago, and then some friends listened to me play a little bit, so I got to get on stage, and I had done some things in our local arts center with acting, just rattling off some lines and enjoying that, and then going to the booth. And finally, they said, get up here on stage. I was petrified, trying to perform in front of anybody. And I understand that anxiety, and there's always something about a good cold beer before you get on stage. It just relaxes everything out. You sound great.
You know? You think you do anyway.
We think we do. Yeah. Now that I'm playing in an old guy's band, you know, at home, it's just been a lot of fun. But I understand the music itself. Now, you were telling me that your wife, Lane, is a professional photographer. So she does a lot of stuff around here. We're going to get her on and just a little bit, folks, and let her share some of the things with us. But as you look to the things that are going on here in Appalachia and all, do you see yourself ending this part of the career, stopping the boating and taking people on tours and doing something else, or maybe just saying, I'm relaxed and I'm just going to go off and travel more?
No. Here's my problem. I have to renew my license every 5 years.
Okay.
So I don't have to take any more tests. I have to have a physical. And the last time I renewed it, I almost didn't pass the physical. Mm-hmm. So my physical comes due in August. So I'm going to try to get my license renewed. And so I'm 77. So that put me up in my 80s. And I told Lane I was just going to keep doing this till one day I forget where I docked my boat. And she'll say, Gil, where's your boat? I'll say, boat? Now, who are you? So I'm going to keep doing that. But I have a second career. I'm a writer. And I'm always going to keep writing. And I'm getting ready to launch a YouTube channel. Because I'm a storyteller. And I just write my stories. That's what I do best. I read a lot. I write articles for the newspaper. If something happens to my boat, if I lose my license, I just take people out. And they want to help me with the gas. It's not a charter. They're just friends paying me a little gas money.
Sure.
So I want to keep my boat business going. And I'm going to see my VA doctor actually later this month, and I'm going to see if he can do the Coast Guard physical.
Tell me now, Gil, tell our listeners how they can get copies of your books. We bought some yesterday, folks. I'm anxious to read the stories, but tell the listeners, can they order this then directly to you? Tell them where they should contact you, though.
Well, that's
on an email.
Just send me an email. My email is gilautrey@gmail.com. And they can also get it from Downtown Books and Pearls here in Apalachicola.
Okay.
Now, I don't have it on Amazon because by the time they take their cut, I don't hardly make any money. But I've got two books, and they're collections of stories I've written through the years. And Lane's a professional photographer, so she has some of her photography in the book. So I have one called Gone with the Tides. I thought that's pretty slick. Gone with the, it's like with the all this culture here dying out, article
yeah.
like that. So, and then I've got one called No Greater Love. Well, Gone with the Tides, more humor, and No Greater Love is a little more serious. There's some things in there about Vietnam and just things like that, but they're $17.50 a piece, so just send me an email.
I think that's great.
And you could go to CaptainGil.com, CaptainGil.com. That's my website, and I have a video on there of my tours and all that, and you can see all that.
Now, on the YouTube, Gil, that you've just discovered, you were saying that you'd already had one set up. Where do they go? YouTube, just Captain Gil?
Captain Gil, or just Gil Autry with two L's, GILAUTREY.
And boom.
It's Gil with two L's like the fish and Autry like the cowboy.
I love it.
People ask me if I'm kin to Gene Autry, and I tell them, no, I'm kin to Champion. They don't know. Nobody knows who that is.
They don't remember that. You and I are trivia buffs. We remember those.
Yeah.
People love to do that. What I'm going to do, folks, is get Gil's wife in here in just a second. So we're going to pause for a moment and then get cranked right back up.
Why don't I tell you how we met?
Oh, that'd be great. Will it be a different story?
Yes.
Because I was going to ask her.
Yes.
But you tell us.
It's going to be a real different story than what I'm going to tell.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell the real story. She ain't going to tell you the real story.
Fair enough.
So I was here in Apalachicola, and she was living in Tallahassee. And so we had friends that were going to set me up on a blind date. First, I said they had me a date with a lady judge. And I thought, I ain't had very good luck with judges in my life. I don't know how this is going to work out. And then they changed my mindset, had a date with Lane. And I can't describe what, I had a feeling. I was just so excited, I couldn't hardly stand it. The day came, I went up to Tallahassee. It was December the 1st, I think. So my wife's friend took me over to Lane's house, and I had gotten a little poinsettia. So I had a little poinsettia in my hand, which is actually my heart I was offering. We go over to our friend's house, and I said, before we go out to dinner, and I said, you know, I'm going to New Orleans on New Year's. And Lane says, I love New Orleans. I said, would you like to go? And she said, I'd love to. And then she thought, what did I just say? So we went out to eat. Now listen, Doc, this works every time. This one works every time. They brought the menu, and she says, I don't know if I want this or I want that. And I said, why don't you order both of them and we'll share? Oh, women love a man that will share. Eat them so sweet he wants to share. And then they brought the food, and I said, we should say the blessing. Oh, his mama taught him to say the blessing. I said, okay, let's hold hands. See, I'm already holding hands with her.
Oh, my.
So we go back over to our friend. We just talked. We're so happy to see each other. We couldn't figure out what it was. So we go back over to our friend's house. I'm going to get killed for putting this on the podcast. We go back over to our friend's house. About 11 o'clock, Lane says, maybe you should take me home. I said, okay. They have a lot of lakes in Tallahassee. So we go by this lake, and this is the truth. There was a huge, beautiful full moon sitting at the end of the lake. So I pulled in the parking lot, put it in park, and we start kissing. We're parking just like we're in high school. We're just so glad to see each other. So we go back over to her house, and we're just talking. So about 2 o'clock, she says, maybe you should go home. I said, yeah, I guess you're right. So I went back over to my friend's house. My friend's kind of an old maid. He was still up. He thought I might have done something stupid and got in trouble, because in the past I've done some stupid things and gotten in trouble. So I got him calmed down. I got him in bed, and I went back in the bedroom, and I called Lane and said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but can I come back over here and talk to you some more? She said, I guess so. So I climbed out the window so I wouldn't wake my friends up, and got in my truck and drove out in the street before I turned on the light, just like in high school. We talked for daylight. We've been together ever since.
Wonderful.
But a couple of weeks, we realized that we had spent an afternoon together at the University of Georgia, and we remembered each other all those years. I remember it clearly. I remember what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We don't remember the exact circumstance, but it's something like we were a fraternity sorority mixer, and we were bored, so we just took off and spent the afternoon together. And so, you know why we didn't get together back then, Doc?
Mm-hmm.
I was dumb. I'm dumb now, but I was so dumb when I was young. It might not have worked out.
My Lord.
So it's been a blessing. We've been together 20 years now.
That's wonderful. And there's a lot to divine intervention.
There
you
is.
You know that. That's awesome.
It's a blessing.
So if she tells the same story, we're in good shape. If she tells a different story, the listeners are going to have to figure out which one is true.
But I wouldn't. I'm a licensed boat captain.
I
can't tell lies.
You can't tell any lies. I love it. We're going to bring her in and see if the story is the same, and then we'll wrap it up with both of them here in just a little while. But we're going to take a little pause here and be right back. Folks, we're back now after our interview with Captain Gill, and we have his wife Lane with us. And welcome to this segment of the show. And tell us a little bit, if you will, and tell our listeners about where you were born and raised and some early education.
I was born in Atlanta as Lane Freeman, now Lane Freeman Autry. And I was four, of course. Atlanta back then was not like it is now, but I was lucky enough, my father had a farm outside of Atlanta while I was growing up, and so I spent a lot of time in both places. It was about an hour outside of Atlanta, and I just loved the farm. I just thought that was great. But I went to the University of Georgia and studied journalism. And then, but I did come from an artistic family. And while I was studying journalism, we were required to take a photojournalism class. And that's before digital, of course. So I saw that print come up in the developer, and I said, that's it. I was a photographer for my entire life in all different kinds, always something different. I worked in a commercial studio. I did portraits for a while, but I always loved landscapes. And I always would, on the side of anything I was doing, early in the morning and late in the afternoon, be out shooting whatever I could, whatever struck me at the time. But I do have a case of ADD, so my photographs will stretch the board. So, and eventually after, well, now I'm getting to the end, but after Gil and I came to Apalachicola, I decided to open up a gallery in town, and which was great fun, except I'd never really done retail, and I thought retail was pretty tough, but I did it for several years. But so it was just my photographs, and people, it got embarrassing after a while because people would come in and say, how many people took these photographs? Oh. So I would say, it was me. It was me. It was like one. I said, okay. But this area is so beautiful. It's been a blessing to be here, for sure. I did, after college, I lived in Boston for a while and several other things. But I ended up in North Georgia and bought a farm, which I was there for 10 years, and which it was just great. I thought I would never leave there. Two of my kids were born in Blairsville, Georgia. And then, anyway, a second marriage ended up with me in Tallahassee, because it was close to St. George Island, which is the barrier island off from Apalachicola. And he had a house there. So my kids ended up finishing school in Tallahassee and going to FSU. And two of them still live in Tallahassee now, which is great for me being here. Then that's where I met Gil. And it was a blind date. But we had met in college, and we spent the day together. It wasn't really a date, but somehow we spent the entire day together. And that was it. At the end of the day, I said, that's my man. That was the love of my life. And I didn't see him again until 20 years ago. So anyway, I could tell you the conversation that we had. I can remember every single thing about it. And then I went out in life trying to find that same feeling, that soul connection. I was in college. I didn't even know then I was an artist, much less. But I had that heart connection. Mm-hmm. I just never really got over it. And so I just kept searching. But anyway, made a few mistakes. But Gil and I met on a blind date, and then, of course, we had been together since the blind date. And then it was about 2 weeks after our blind date that we were in Tallahassee sitting on the sofa. And by then, I didn't remember his name, but the voice. It was the voice. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you remember blah, blah, some of the stuff we talked about? And he had that shocked look you can't fake. And he said, that was me. And I'm like, holy smokes. So at the time, my girlfriends in Tallahassee were like, you have to go on Oprah. You've got to tell my story. So I've worked at relationships all my life that didn't seem to work out. And this one, I don't even work at it, and it just works out. It's just been a wonderful 20 years, I will say that. And I've continued with my photography, which I love. And, you know, our kids all get along. And, I mean, they were never raised in the same house, but they've, you know, still, we see each other a lot. And it's good, been a good thing.
I think it's wonderful. And as I said earlier in this broadcast, the story's the same. And divine intervention, to me, Lane, works. It really does, whatever the circumstance. I think it's just such a blessing when you do that. I have dabbled, and I'm sure you've heard this story thousands of times, in amateur photography. I consider myself terrible at it. Somehow, in this era of phones, you get some decent shots, and we share them with Facebook friends and family. But as a professional photographer, and you said you really enjoyed the landscapes, did you do a lot, or have you done a lot of portrait photography as well?
Yes, I had I had a studio in my house for a while in Tallahassee and also in the mountains. But it's still landscapes are my favorite. But then when I was getting everything together to open up a gallery of my own, I had to do it by category. For another project. So I had to categorize them. And I did. And I'm like, I have so many trees and flowers.
Oh.
I would never have thought once you put them all together that I would have had that much of that category.
Yeah.
So basically it's really whatever strikes me. I'm not real patient. Like I don't do birds because I can't. Oh. I do not have the patience. It's a whole different market. But most photographers have specialized in certain things over other things.
Do you catch yourself when you're out, you and Gil are traveling, you've got the camera around your neck for opportunities that pop up?
Oh, yeah. I'm always looking for the something to photograph, and especially when the light is right.
And help us as listeners, you mentioned that just a second ago, morning and afternoon of those lighting situations, is one better than the other for different subjects?
I really prefer the evening, but morning is really nice as well. We call it the sweet light.
Sweet light.
Because in the morning, you start out dark, and then gradually the day gets brighter, and then noontime is just terrible. It's like harsh. And then you go into the late afternoon, and that's why I don't like this change in times that we're having on Sunday, because when the light is really sweet, it's 9 o'clock at night. But anyway, and then storms bring us a certain other kind of light. It just varies, but the light is the key to any photograph.
How do you, as a pro photographer, feel about the development of these crazy phone cameras? Not good, I assume, for us amateurs, okay, but not to use that. If we really want to learn photography, we need a good, SLR? Is that what they are?
Or
yes. 35 millimeters.
But I've been a hard one moving to digital because I knew film. I'm old school, real old school. So I knew film. And I was taught that you crop it in the viewfinder, what you want to take a picture of. You don't wait till you get to the dark room or the printer and then start cropping. Yeah. You get it and you get the exposure right. And then you're like good to go. Digital, they just click, delete, and maybe you'll find a good one. But they haven't studied lighting and they haven't studied all those things that really go into it. And also digital, the light, when you take a digital photograph, the colors are very harsh.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, like film, it's not that harsh. But then you might put filters on it to vary it some. But you really could get more of a different tone. When Gil used to say, when I had the gallery, which is now like 2009, 10, or about in that area, people would come. I would sell my print photographs above my digital photographs, and there is no way they would ever know the difference. But you still have to take digital and then add the gradations, because it's like blaring red, green, yellow. where film, you have tones, and so you have to work with that. So digital's been hard for me. But these newest phones, they really have amazing cameras. Amazing. And they can do a lot of things that a big camera have. Depth of field mm-hmm. is, you know what that is?
Yes.
You can, my iPhone has depth of field. They didn't have that. So they're good. And I had a new iPhone one time, just not that many years ago, and I had just gotten it. And we ended up going to a friend that got married at the courthouse. But it was planned, but they didn't have any of the flowers and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But they said, so we're in there, and they said, with this harsh overhead lighting that you have in a courtroom that's mm-hmm. just, like, awful. And Ginger says, Lane has her camera. And I was like, I just got this thing. Anyway, it was amazing what I was able to take for that spur of the moment with the manipulation that you could mm-hmm. do just before I even clicked the shutter. You can say natural light, or you can do studio light. But anyway, there are advantages, and they are here to stay. Everybody has one. Everybody takes pictures.
And I would imagine, Lane, that less and less folks are becoming enamored with being a professional photographer the way you learned it from the ground up, dark room, all that kind of stuff. And certainly I tried, actually, don't ask me why, to find, when I got an old camera out, to find film. I really couldn't find any film to just go buy. And somebody says, we can get you some, and Amazon's always going to have something. I said, no, I just put the film in and just take some old pictures. And it's a great career. Did you do a lot of weddings and things?
When my kids were little and I was in the mountains, I did some weddings because it was the thing that I did not love it, but it held its purpose. And I was able to, it was the most money I could make at the in the area when my kids were little and be away from home the least amount of time. So it was fine. And it was before Bridezilla and all the over-the-top weddings that, yes, that is not fun.
And Gil was telling me about some of his. My oldest granddaughter, 27, is actually a wedding coordinator in Athens. And she tells me some wild stories. And she is an excellent photographer. I think it's a gift, just like yours would be a gift. But she opened a little business for a while and then realized, no, I don't think I want to do that. I'll get this other job. I'll be paid to coordinate a wedding.
Yeah.
But some of her stories. And then these people, Lane, come in from everywhere. This is Athens, Tennessee. 13,000 people, as my listeners know. And folks are flying in from California and New York and Michigan for weddings at a venue in Athens, Tennessee, because they have done a website that is awesome. It's an all-in-one package. They don't have to go hire separate photographers. They don't have to hire separate caterers and all this. And I guess they're willing to do it, but some of the stuff she tells me that they unload, just phenomenal. The amount of money for those kinds of things. And I'm thinking, oh, goodness, this is crazy. But what would you advise a young person who wants to do professional photography? Say I'm a junior in college and I'm in photojournalism or journalism. What would you say to me, Doc, this is what I want you to consider about the rest of your life as a professional photographer? What would you tell that youngster about today, things that have changed? What would you say?
Gosh, that's a hard one. It just depends on what you love to photograph, number one. And then you've got to stick with that. So it's still hard to do it on your own. It's better if you're involved in something where you have a steady paycheck, I guess is basically, because then a lot of times you're just like in these wedding things and you're arguing with somebody about details that just waste your time, basically.
I love the way you say Bridezilla. And I've asked her, and it's interesting, And I think Gil said something yesterday on our trip. Who is the hardest to deal with, of course? Is it the mom of the bride?
Yes.
Is it the groom's mom? Who is it? And I don't know that there's always the same answer, but it is unreal. But I greatly appreciate you taking some time to share your career with our listeners. And I'm going to take a moment. We're going to pause for a moment and bring Gil back in and let the two of you wrap this up. It's so exciting. As I told him, you all are just the second couple that I've been able to do a couples podcast. And this is awesome, and especially in a favorite spot for me here at Apalachicola and St. George. So we'll be right back, folks. Folks, we're back and excited that Gil and Lane are sitting together, and he said to be sure and let you all know that for support and encouragement, they are holding hands, and I think it's wonderful. But I've just been delighted to have you both on and talk about careers and stories, and can't wait for folks to feed back to us. And folks, Gil has hundreds of email addresses from his career. Lane has a lot of her stuff out there. And tell people, Lane, where they could go to get some of your photography. Do they have a place they can come to email-wise for you that some of that stuff could be out, or they can view some of this? Where could they see some of your photography? Would it be through the local bookstore we were talking about? Or?
Yes, there's several local areas. The bookstore would be one. At the I guess that's my project. I had a website all my life, and it crashed about a year ago.
Oh.
So it's on the agenda.
Okay.
What will it be if you bring it back up?
My name, it was laneautry.com.
Okay, so we could do that on that website.
Yes.
And then maybe in the meantime, Gil, they can come to the website on your site as well to cross over until she gets that back up.
Yes.
And you had given us that earlier, so yeah.
Let me ask you.
Sure.
Is she as pretty as I told you she was?
Absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Absolutely. No argument at all. And the stories matched, Gil. That's what
they
was
did.
Good. They did match. And I think it's awesome because that doesn't always happen. It was classic.
Did she say she kissed me first?
Oh, no. Did I ask that? I don't think I did. But I think that's another great part of the story.
I'm not telling.
Yes. Don't kiss and tell, Gil. You know better than that. But now, as we're wrapping up, and I'm so delighted to have you both on the program, and I'm excited for the other listeners that share this to get that out there, what do the two of you have to say about living in this area, Apalachicola, the positives about being here for this many years and spending lifetime helping the kids come back, the grandkids? What can you all tell our listeners about being in this area?
Go ahead.
What's not to like about it? It's a small town, and it's right on the river, and we call it a seaport town, the seaport mentality. Mm-hmm. So you have all kinds of people that come and go, that either have second homes here or they're visiting somebody or they just heard about it. They're just in and out. So you just always somebody new around, and you don't have the cliques like you do in most small towns. I'm not saying they're not cliques, but it's more just because there's just always something new going on, people-wise and weather-wise. And now we've become a big music town, so there's just always some new group that's playing because they get such great exposure and art galleries, and it's visually a beautiful place with lots of blue sky.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've lived a lot of different places, but this is the only place I felt like I really belong, that this is my home. Like Lane's talking about, it's a port city. It's the end of the river, so you get a lot of crazy people that are trying to get away from somewhere, and this is as far as they down the river as they go. As a matter of fact, I'm the only normal person in Apalachicola.
Now, Wayne, will that stand up, you think?
But to me, it's almost to say that Apalachicola has a soul.
Yes.
And I just, yes. I hope it never loses it.
Oh, I like that. Like that.
That's
a lot.
That's actually very true.
But it's like Lane was saying, everybody has a story. If you want to tell your story, fine. If you don't, that nobody bothers you. And I guarantee you, I'm Captain Gill. Hardly anybody got any idea what my last name is or care. I'm just Captain Gill.
And I think I told you, Gill, my first name being Shelley, people don't remember it. Even in town, I've been there 47 plus years back. Went to college there, so it's been my second hometown forever. And 99% of the people that know me, it's just Doc. And I love that fact just because it's okay. And like you say, Athens, I think, has our own soul there, where Gail is. And it's just a blessing. And how can you ask for more things than to do that? But you all have been a true delight. And as my first out-of-state podcast, we're going to get more of these. And I can guarantee you when Gail and I get back, most likely next year, we're going to look you all up, take you all out to dinner at your favorite place, and get back out on the big river like we couldn't do yesterday due to the weather. But thank you all so, so much. And folks, appreciate you all listening to the program. And as I tell each and every one of you all, have a safe and healthy day. And I'll see you a little further up the road.